evening, everybody. Welcome to day five of Friendship Week. We're so happy to see you here. You guys, this has been such a phenomenal week. And I'm not sure who of you were on with us at the end of yesterday's session, but someone said, I just need to share that my husband was working from home today and was overhearing the session. And said, if I had heard this 30 years ago, it would have changed my life. So we've been talking about really important stuff. And I am so grateful for Caroline McGuire and her book, Why Will No One Play With Me? This is life-changing stuff. And as we said on day one, the whole big why of why we've done this event is the findings that came out of the Harvard Adult Study of Adult Development. And they looked at thousands and thousands of factors, and it is positive relationships that are the number one factor to a happy, satisfying life. So, parents, I want you to pat yourselves on the back for carving out the time to be here. And now, what I really want to encourage you to do today is not only sort of bask in the glow of having the insights. But now it's time to practice them. It's like I can read a book on strength training, but I'm not going to build my muscles unless I get down to the gym and lift the weights. So now it's time to practice. And that's what we'll be covering today. So let's start with just like a quick review, Caroline, of what we've covered this week.
Okay, so we had the iceberg, right? And so we're going to remember if they could, they would, because there's so much beneath the surface, right? We have the eight elements of highly effective coaches. Debbie, do you want me to go into the rest of those right now?
So we covered the first half. Let's just briefly touch on before we didn't cover.
Okay, these are super simple. And after this week, I bet you'll say, oh, I could have intuited that. One is honor your child, aha. So, one of the things we sometimes do as parents, and I'm totally guilty of this, is I want a certain aha, right? I want you to realize you don't read the room. I want you to realize you're too silly, goofy. But we have to honor whatever aha they have. And we should celebrate them because all these little ahas lead to them ultimately having more self-awareness. Paving the way, we have talked about in a million different fashions, but it basically means having that relationship and talking about friendship and helping your child get ready to work on these friendship skills. And this paving process can take a while, right? You may need to talk about getting help. You may need to talk about, what keeps us stuck. You may need to help them if they aren't feeling safe and they aren't feeling good about things. There may be other skills you have to build too. But the biggest thing I can encourage you to do is start talking about friendship and start talking about everyone is working on something because that's key. And then we kind of meet them where they are, right? So you may want them to have different perspectives, different views, different skills, but where they are is where they are. And we don't leave them where they are, but we have to know where they are. If they are more immature than their same age peers, if they are just really, terrified to do this. If they are reluctant to talk or defended, that's where we are, they are, and we meet them where they are, and then we use our strategies to help move them forward. And I'm going to use Debbie's analogy. We are their tour guide. So as the shepherd moving them along, I can't, fast forward that learning. I have to meet them where they are and then move them on this journey. And it is a journey. It takes time. And then be a cheerleader. I want you to celebrate every win, every small 1% gain. I clap for kids. And many times kids will say, I wanted to do this because I wanted to see you get so excited and clap. And I really love to also help them witness something, even if it's just a small thing. So if they come in and they tell you something that happened, and then they kind of brush over it, which many of us do because, yeah, other people do whatever it is very easily, but for them it was hard. Please stop and just say, wow, I just want to like focus on what you just said. That is amazing. And celebrate. I love.
Absolutely. And Casey, let's find that mute any background noise there. Thank you. A couple thoughts, Caroline. We don't have to save the praise just for when they make a friend, but as
No.
they're sort of lifting the equivalent of the 5 pound weights or the 1 pound weight, it's like, oh my gosh, you reached out and sent a text. That's amazing. You weren't doing that a month ago. Oh my gosh, you proposed a next step to meet at the park. That's incredible. You weren't doing that a month ago. So really just noticing and bolding and underlining those little 1% little baby steps towards the goal is so important, like you're saying. Another thing I
Absolutely.
just wanted to, yeah, one more thing I want to highlight is I've heard from a lot of parents this week that they're having personal ahas. I heard on Wednesday, it was hard for me to list what I'm good at, what I'm enjoying, what I'm interested in. You talked about on day one that one of the signals to know if our child's having trouble with socializing is can they meet new friends in a new environment? That goes for us too. Are all of our friends from high school or college? Or, I have to say, my besties are from when my kids were in preschool. We were doing a lot of volunteering together. Are we making new friends? So I think being vulnerable in front of our kids and say, you know what? This is a life skill. I'm working on this life skill, and we can narrate. Oh, I met this woman at a school event today. I'd like to get to know her better. I'm going to see if she wants to go on a dog walk with me and narrate how you're reaching out, your own 1% gains. Would you agree?
I would agree, and I think that I can't stress enough how much that narration has an impact. Many times teenagers are incensed if their parents are pushing them on this and then their parents aren't doing it themselves. And I also think they're listening. So anything you narrate, just even if it's like, I don't really love the way something went down, or I'm feeling like I need to, make sure I connect with people. Whatever it is, they are listening, and it allows them to understand that this is a process. Because I think that there is sometimes a little romanticization of the friendship process, that everybody else has this super easy time, and they plant the magic beans. And the stock grows, and they don't have to do anything, and that there's no work involved. And I think that it is a lot of work, and a lot of effort goes into it. And I think that there's ups and downs for all people. And so I think that allowing kids to understand that is really a good thing.
Definitely, definitely. And it's something, did we cover those four coaching principles? Because I also want to talk about practice.
We did cover those four coaching principles.
Perfect, perfect. I don't want to move on too quickly, but all right. So we've had lots of aha moments, lots of insights. How do we now practice this, get it in the bones, knowing that we'll be just like we practiced having a consistent exercise routine or having consistently nutritious food? How do we consistently practice having social connection?
Well, one thing I want to say is that I like to say we're in the practice zone, so that our mindset is this is practice. This is experimentation. This is not looking for perfection. This is effort, right? I want kids to realize that when we're in the practice zone, just like you're practicing any skill, you mess up, right? Sometimes the piano chord does not come out as you intended it to. And that, I think, provides a lot of relief for some kids. We are learning, we are experimenting. And this also leads to a growth mindset. One of the things that Carol Dweck has told me is that you need to constantly be in this learning zone, and that is a huge piece of growth mindset that is actually under discussed. So I think we want to make sure that we are in this learning zone. Every relationship, every connection, everything we ask, everything we do, therefore becomes, I'm learning this friendship thing. And I would make the analogy, not just for younger kids, but older too, of something they've learned where they had missteps, right? You know, a kid told me all about his process to, you know, build that robot for robotics. It wasn't a linear thing, right?
Yeah.
So whatever we're learning, we have missteps.
Exactly. And what we talk about in the Bright and Quirky Idea Lab, our parent learning community, is there is winning and there's learning. There is no failure. I constantly remind myself of that because we do have a lot of perfectionism in our population. And if we try to make a friend and they're not interested, there's the temptations that none of this works and it's not worth it and nobody wants to be friends with me, and the catastrophizing. It's like, as parent, we could say, hold on, we're in the practice zone, we ran an experiment. What did that experiment teach us? You know, think of it approaching life like a science fair, right? We had a hypothesis, we used a tool, we have some results. How are we going to iterate for next time? I'm still doing that at midlife. I mean,
Yep.
this is a life skill. This is a mindset to approach life with. And as we know from the Harvard study, there's nothing more important than positive relationships. Are you guys tired of me saying that? I feel like I need to really like pound that in, because this is, I was telling Caroline, you know, it should just be part of our daily vernacular. And someone needs to have a public service announcement of how important this is. So I think you guys will look back on this week as like, oh my gosh, we got the toolkit for what matters most in life. And it is so deeply validating, so deeply meaningful to have this sort of purpose and to bring it to your lives. And now you are equipped with the toolkit. You can bring it to your whole family and yourself and your kids. And this is really big stuff. So I love the practice zone. I also want to review the next step, and not only review it, but why don't we really do the next step? And Caroline, I was telling you, I think this is my biggest takeaway this week. Like, of course, we sort of know when you meet someone, and we talked about the flavors of friends. You pass by someone, you have an acquaintance, and then we want to go, if we're interested in them, to friendship, and then, you know, from buddy to friend to bestie. You know, we only have a couple of besties in our whole life, but there's that trajectory. And of course, we know we have to do some sort of next step, but to actually think of it as a thing that we have control over, and you know, that we're going for the Goldilocks, not too big, not too small, but just right. Can we dive into this a little bit?
Yeah, so I want to first say that this came from crowdsourcing. So about a year ago, I was writing an article on loneliness and college, and I crowdsourced and I said, you know, calling all college students, like, what's the thing you wish you had known? And I put it in a ton of different groups and a ton of places. And the next step came from one of my friends from college daughter. And she said, this is, and she's definitely bright and quirky. And she said, this is the thing I didn't learn till like after my freshman year that I wished I had had. And then I started applying it just everywhere. So I reached out to a bunch of my clients and former clients, knowing I was having this meeting. And they had a few things they wanted you to know. So one, It is an addition or an add-on, and it is a next step you're offering. And the best way is if it has to do with what you're doing with that person or how you know them. So if you know them from Pokemon, right, it's like, hey, why don't we show each other our Pokemon cards? The other thing they said is kids resist this, but it really worked well for them. Offer help. So a next step could literally be, hey, I can help you with your science fair project, right? The other thing they said is buddy up is a great way for a next step. So just the concept of we can be doing things parallel together, right? So we can be studying this science stuff together. We can be, you know, going and doing the required rowing for our rowing team together, whatever it is to just buddy up. And I think if we think of the next step, the reason it works so well is for many kids, they're terrified, right? And so this is what I use with a lot of my perfectionists and a lot of my kids who have high anxiety. Is this is a t it can be very tiny. So it can be, hey, let's walk down to Starbucks together. But it also can be something tiny that they say, like, next time, like, let's share notes, right? And I want to stress that because for some kids, like, I'm tired and I need to go rest now that I just said that, right? And I like to do those kind of tiny things that are 1% gains and that are really effective. For other kids, it'll be like, hey, can we hang out and watch a movie together? Hey, can we, you know, go somewhere together? But for some kids, it's tiny. It's sitting next to someone. Like, hey, can we sit together next time? Right? That feels like for some of the kids, that's like, oh, that was so big and I did it. Right? One of the things that someone said is the best next step they've ever done. So I want to share it with you is go visit puppies at a mall or an animal shelter. They wrote me a text and said, I guarantee you will be bonded forever. And I said, okay, I will tell the bright and quirky folks that. It could also be, let's walk to class together. Like, let's meet up and, you know, let's go to this horrendous thing together. But I think the biggest thing is if you can invite someone to do something, you know, we both love D&D, let's do this thing together. Then it's a next step and you're ready with it. And what I usually do with my clients is I arm them with a few different options. We brainstorm and then we have like, okay, I feel really comfortable. This has gone really well. I'm inviting them to, you know, downtown Boston where there's a, you know, a comic book convention and we're going to go together. No, I'm feeling like terribly, you know, anxious. So I'm going to just say, hey, let's walk to this club together so that they have a couple options depending on how the conversation has gone and how they feel.
Now, what questions bubbling up for me? And before I ask this, parents, I want to issue you a challenge. Add to the chat. Give us a first name of an acquaintance of yours, and you can make it up, and what next step you can reach out with. So, you know, I met Nancy at the dog park. This is fictitious. And I'm a big hiker. I'm going to see if she wants to go for a hike sometime. Actually, no, this is actually true. One of my colleagues said, you and someone I know in Seattle have a lot in common with stage of life and career. And then she connected us on text. And I was like, well, do you want to go for coffee or a hike? She's like, yeah, let's hike. So it worked out. So put in the chat the name of someone you're thinking about that you would like to develop a relationship with. And okay, I see Nicole Coffee to talk over dyslexia support group. Fantastic. Okay, great. Haley from work. Let's go to kids hiking group or kids library class. Michelle, met her at art class. I could ask her to get together over coffee or Zoom to discuss homeschool stuff. This is fantastic. And I don't think our kids realize that we're building the muscle too. All right, fantastic. Caroline, I want to ask you about number one, a gracious mindset, a self-compassionate mindset when someone, they probably won't say no, but they might say something like, I'm busy that day, or, if your bid is not met. That's one question I have. And then my second question is, have you ever been in a situation where you're like, hey, we should have lunch sometime? And the other person's like, yeah, we definitely should. And then nothing ever happens. Is
Yes.
that just the lack of someone saying, hey, well, how about next week? When are you free? So those couple questions are bubbling up.
Okay, so one of the things that I do with kids is I look at the signs that, and I do this with adults too, the signs that someone wants to move from an acquaintance to a friend, and I review what people have said to them. So if I say, if someone says, hey, let's have lunch, and they say definitely, and then nothing happens, what we tend to do, those of us who've had a lot of rejection, is we tend to sort of overanalyze and then start thinking, did they like me? Did they not? So what I like to do is go to signs and go to what they have said in the past. And one of the things I want to say to parents is, yes, of course, there can be times when the person is just not interested and they're being nice and they just said yes. But when I dig into this with kids, what I often find is that the person doesn't follow through on anything or something, right? Like there, when we think about, so this is where I go back to, like, who is this person and what do we know about them? And this is especially, teenagers, young adults, adults, because a lot of times they automatically go to, they don't want me. And then we go over what are the signs that they wanted to move from an acquaintance to a friend? What is their history? Not 100%, but there are many times when it's just a person who like doesn't follow through. In the compassionate mindset, is that when something doesn't work out because of our history of rejection, we tend to go right to catastrophe, right? That's why I want them to be in the experiment zone, because I want them to be sending out lots of invitations and lots of bids. And I know this is not easily done, but I know there are some kids you're going to like be pulling teeth to get them to join one activity, right? But the best situation is where they have multiple opportunities going on, so that if one doesn't work out, it's not, a disaster for the in their mind. And I really challenge those lack of compassion, statements. Like I tend to say, would you talk to a friend that way, right? And I tend to ask them, like, what would you say to so and so, and I'll pick a friend. And I really ask them, they'll tend to blazers over it. And I do this very coach-like thing, and it's in the book too, which is I'll be like, wait, go back, go back, go back. What did you just say? You don't deserve friends because you have fill in the blank, because you this, and I also quote research, and you can say this to them. I have done research, right? There is nothing in the research that shows that no people with autism, no people with ADHD are wanted. Like, we're not rejected solely based on that. And so a lot of times kids will tell me things like that, like, well, people like me just can't. And it's like, that's not true. What is true is that sometimes people want to move from an acquaintance to a friend. Sometimes people are looking for more friends, right? And people have to want to move from an acquaintance to a friend. If they don't, that might have nothing to do with you. And I know this is very hard, and that's why a lot of times we have to talk about that compassionate self-talk.
Yeah, and this did come up earlier in the week, especially
Empathy.
with your spy tool,
Bias.
that we really need to make the distinction between observation and mind reading. And mind reading is one of the cognitive distortions. You guys can Google cognitive distortions. I don't, there's like 8 or 10 of them, of little tricks our minds play on us. And we need to gather evidence to see if our mind is telling us the truth. And, like that person who doesn't return a text, we could come to the conclusion all we know, all the evidence we have is they didn't return the text. Now, the mind is a meaning-making machine. What meaning are we going to give that? We could give it the meaning. And if your child is like, well, they just don't like me, it's like, okay, well, what are all the possible meanings? Let's come up with a few different meanings. It could mean they don't like you. It could mean they got busy and forgot about it. It could mean they're checking their calendar. It could mean so many things. And it takes some awareness to say, oh, wait, let me ask the question, is that an observation or is that mind reading? Because it's so easy to jump to conclusions, and we just need to take a beat and check if we're accurate or if we have enough evidence to be accurate.
One of my favorite phrases ever that I was taught years ago is, "What else could it be?" And I want to say, read receipt is sort of the devil, because if they see that it was red, they tend to say, "See." But I want to tell you that because I've been with all of you, there are many texts I've read at, 15 minutes to come on here, and then I've put away and I haven't responded to. So there's logistical things. I'm about to play soccer. I read something. I toss my phone in my bag. I go play soccer. I forget about it. There's many ways that this can logistically happen. So I always say to kids, what else could it be? What's the evidence? And then what else could it be?
Love that. Love that. What else is important to think about as we put these tools into practice, leaving this Friendship Week?
I hate to say this because as a mom, I feel like everything always falls on me and as a parent. But I think the biggest thought I have is, even if you take a small next step, keep using this material, and it's, so it's easy to get caught up in life and, you take your notes and you put them aside. And I totally am there a lot of the time. And so a lot of you in the Facebook group have started doing things, have started thinking things, have started trying things. And I'm so absolutely thrilled. And so I would ask you, what's one thing you can do? And the easiest thing to me is to start narrating, is to start having those conversations and then, bring this into daily life.
Another next step I would really like to talk about, and in the workbook, it's the sheet called Getting to Green. And this comes from polyvagal theory. In our idea lab, we talk about this a lot. It's been like really a key that has unlocked a lot of doors for our parents. And the idea here is that our nervous system can be in different states. And this is polyvagal theory was originated by Stephen Porges and translated by Stuart Shanker and Mona Delahook for parents. Their work is absolutely beautiful. So the first pathway our nervous system can be in is what we call green. It's where you're calm, you're ready to learn, ready to engage. Another state is the red zone, where we go into fight or flight. And we do that because our nervous system is sensing threat in the environment. And then the blue zone, which typically comes after the red zone, is shut down. This is, we saw a lot of this in pandemic. Kids going in their room like a turtle putting their head in the shell. This is when, we see disengagement, isolating. It is all the elegant logic here is the nervous system is trying to protect itself. Now, not only are our kids in green, red, or blue, and a lot of our bright and quirky kids live in red or blue because, and actually we sent out a vlog today. It's probably all in your inbox about how 8 out of 10 bright and quirky adults have experienced trauma in their life. And it is often because of these little situations where our kids feel like they don't fit. And maybe it's a sideways glance from a teacher. Maybe it's a, hey, sit in your seat. Hey, don't doodle while I'm talking. Maybe it's pure rejection. There can be so many little T traumas that add up over time and can put us in the red or the blue zone. Also, us parents can be in green, red, or blue. Now, I know when we say self-care and I think about self-care, I used to put it at the bottom of the list. Everybody in the family came before me. And one message I really want you to walk away with this week is that there's this idea of co-regulation, that when our kids are in red or blue, we could regulate to their red or blue. But what we want instead is to you work on your own green zone, and then the kids can regulate to your green zone. It's called co-regulation. So I want you to take a moment and think about the activities that put you in the green zone. And please share them in the chat if you can. It could be my green zone things are getting in nature. Doing a neighborhood walk, journaling. I've talked to so many people where, they really just it helps them to figure things out by journaling. Talking to a friend, doing art, singing, having a cup of tea and reading a good book, breathing, lots of movement. In Bessel van der Kolk's book, Body Keeps the Score, he talks about, Tai Chi, yoga, all different kinds, Qigong, all different kinds of movement, helping process trauma through the body. And we're not really going to get into trauma today, but gardening, reading, Pilates, listening to Enya or Tori Amos, mindless movies, running my hands over leaves. Wonderful, wonderful. So as you move out into the world practicing this stuff, I want you to think about your neural state, and that if you are in the red or the blue zone, prioritizing the activities that bring you to green zone and could be that that green presence, making your home a self safe haven, and then your kids can regulate to that. Caroline, anything to add?
Yeah, one of
Caroline.
the things I have found over the years that I will give as just something I have found as a mother as well is that I personally need certain things to be in the green zone. And I actually have come to a point where I don't care if other people understand. And if I could give anybody a gift, it would be for you to get to that place too. And so when people make little comments to me, this is what I think in my head. This is what I need. I know this is what I need. I'm sorry you don't understand. So I'll give you a personal example. I don't cook. I don't enjoy cooking. I don't get time to cook. I'm with all of you lovely people. And when I actually leave here, it's really not what I want to do. And many times I get kind of criticism about that. But when I try to add on cooking to my crazy, crazy life, it tips me over the edge and I'm not able to be in that zone, which means I'm not able to breathe in and out and say, okay, what happened on the bus? Right? Okay, so this is the schedule. What do we need to do? How do I need to be your shepherd? And so I would just say to you, what you find you need. And I would empower you. If I could give you this gift, it would be for you to say to yourself, this is what I need. This is what I need. And we are raising kids that are like kids who need us to co-regulate, and therefore I do what I need to do.
Beautiful, beautiful. And what a lovely family conversation this makes, too, because we have our extroverts and their batteries are charged by being in connection with people. That gets them in the green zone, where it might put an introvert in the red zone. Our introverts might like one friend and a spare versus lots and lots of friends, one friend and a spare that they can go deeper with. So different things put different people in the green zone. And I just also want to say that we all cycle through. We're all at times, what names did we give these? Common connected Claire, worried Wendy, burned out Betty. It's very common to cycle through, and we want to grow our common collected Claire. All right. Someone said, I subscribe to the Kristen Bell philosophy. I do me, your judgments are not my problem.
Oh, I love that.
That's great. That's great. Okay, fantastic. All right. I want to move to questions. This is our last Q&A with Caroline for Friendship Week. And I want to do a couple of announcements first. First of all, we've been talking over the week about the Bright and Quirky Idea Lab. That's our parent learning community. We have eight pillars that we focus on, and we've done one of them this week, which is social connection. We also focus on other common challenges for bright and quirky kids. We do one a month. Executive function, tech overuse, stress, worry, and anxiety, emotional regulation, and challenging behaviors, physical factors that are important to our mental health. And I'm sure I'm forgetting one or two. Also, I have interviewed many, many experts who are as incredible as Caroline, and from that have created the possibility plan, which is the Bright and Quirky framework. We are going to be doing a live run of the possibility plan. We call it the Possibility Plan Boot Camp. It starts April 18th, and we'd love for you to be a part of it. You will get the entire Bright and Quirky framework for all of the eight pillars, and I have no doubt it will increase your confidence, give you a ton of tools. And we have an incredible community of amazingly wise parents who have been through a lot, and master's and PhD level coaches. A video library that is probably the best on the internet, specifically for bright and quirky kids, for raising bright and quirky kids. So we're ending this today. Replays are available through Sunday night. When you join the Idea Lab, you'll have indefinite access to the replays as long as you're a member. And very important, a portion of today's proceeds. We're going to be donating to charity, to Lives in the Balance. That is Ross Green's organization that is focusing on legislation and school education to end restraint and seclusion of kids who have the unlucky behaviors of getting physical when they're dysregulated. Again, we come back to polyvagal theory and states of the nervous system. So if you've enjoyed, this friendship week at the low price that we were able to give it to you for, I would encourage you to think about upgrading to the Idea Lab. And Casey's putting the link in the chat. It's brightandquirky.com/FW-Idea Lab. And you can use code FRIEND, all caps, to get $29 off your membership. And we need to give away a Starbucks card today. So let this is Casey's favorite part. Let's have Caroline, is there anything you want to know that to get the Starbucks card, or should I think of something?
I would love to know, this might be too broad, Debbie, but like what like is the thing that they thought was the most unique and the most powerful? 'Cause I will just I think a lot of my advice is very unique and very how to. But I would love to know what like they felt was just the most powerful thing. I don't know if that's too broad.
No, go for it, guys. If you can put in your answer, and then let's randomly pick one. All right. Greet making friends as practice. Most helpful to me were the concrete skills to work on in day four. I love you saying, we're running experiments, practice making friends. Silly goofy scale, never saw that before. Parents are the coaches, feel so empowered as a parent. Thank you, Caroline. Most powerful social spy. I really needed the reminder they would if they could. Flavors of friendship was a great breakdown. Oh my gosh, they're coming so fast. Knowing your child might not know what it looks like to control themselves, identifying current interests. So many good ones. Okay, I'm gonna randomly pick, and I can't wait to read the chat later. Oh wait, I put the chat up too far. Okay. All right, Genevieve, flavors of friendship. Genevieve, please private message your email to Casey and we'll get that Starbucks card out to you very soon. Okay, let's go into Q&A. Miriam, love to hear from you.
Hi,
Hi.
I was hoping you could give a little advice to those of us who have kids with speech difficulties. I think a lot of neurodivergent kids may be in that boat. For mine, at first he was unintelligible, so we thought it was apraxia. He got over that, and then the diagnosis was stuttering, so he had a lot of trouble getting his words out. He's mastered that, but the last couple of years, his challenge is low volume. So, any of these, I think the difficulty is the same. You need to have someone who's really focused, someone who's patient and listening to you. Otherwise, you just can't break into these group conversations and you fade into the background. And what I notice with him is he will eventually literally fade into the background. He will end up behind the group of kids who are about to go into PE or whatever it may be. And I keep telling him to raise his voice, speak louder, and it's just not happening. He's not there yet, and who knows when he will be. So, what can you tell those types of kids?
And Miriam, how old and what are his interests?
He's 10 and a half. He loves his mixed martial arts class, gaming, animals. And he's on a robotics team.
Oh, I'm so
Fabulous.
happy. Robotics is one of my favorite things. Not that I could build a robot, but I like that they do. So I completely have many clients like this, and I also have raised this little person. And I want to say first that I'm sure you are. Get them every single opportunity and service and private speech, everything you possibly can. The other thing I want to say is I feel like the mixed martial arts could help us here because I have watched mixed martial arts classes. They're fabulous. And my experience has been that the staff is pretty awesome and understands bright and quirky kids. So my experience is in those classes, you have to, yell and say certain things. And I would love for one of them to sort of, you can pave the way by talking to them secretly and say, get him to raise his voice there and then say to him, listen to how that has such an effect. Because I want to like sprinkle in his life as many as possible people who are reinforcing this. The other thing is that with these kids, that can fade into the background, and I know exactly what you mean. I want to do as much as I can of that daily coaching and narration and reinforce, like, you spoke up there, that was great. Now, look, you got what you wanted. One of my beliefs, and I've asked many speech paths about this, I think kids who have speech delays, it's almost like they don't quite get. They get what their needs met through other modalities, and what they need to sort of cross over into is realizing that the way you get your needs met is partially through speech. And I think that for many of them, what I notice is like it's just not their go-to. Speaking is not their go-to. And so I love to reinforce in that way. Anything you can do, this goes to my child development background, where you help him with the words and then you constantly reinforce those words. So emotional vocabulary, you know, if he says mad only, you're like, you're frustrated. You're trying to bring out those words. And then I would love for him to do a bunch of role play around, okay, let's say it's not speech when he starts to fade in the background. How can he be more present and be less of that sort of fading? Is it that he needs to stand in a certain place? Is it that he needs to, you know, find a buddy who helps him? The answer may be, though, that he needs to raise his voice. And in many cases, I rehearse. I even go to playgrounds with kids and we go and we stand where they're coming out to go to the recess and stuff. And I role play with them and show them, like, everybody's going to run. You have like three beats, and I use that future thinking. But I think the mixed martial arts is my favorite way that we're going to get his voice raised because they are fabulous.
One thing I want to add is improv class. I don't know if you live anywhere near an improv class, but what's so, and we did this during COVID with some of the kids with the Miracle Project online. It's amazing. And kids started camera off or nonverbal. And then as the sessions went on, they got more comfortable. And what's so cool about improv is that if we do have a quiet member doing nonverbal stuff, the kids can play off of that and throw balls or do things with their body. And it's just so creative and so meeting each child where they're at. So I would definitely add improv to the list.
Those are smart
All right.
suggestions. Thank you.
You bet. All right, moving right along. And someone asked, can you get the possibility plan without the Idea Lab? My suggestion to you would be to go for the Idea Lab annual option, and then you can cancel it so it doesn't renew in a year, and then you get access all year to the possibility plan and the whole video library and any events you want to do. So that would be the annual option. And that link again is brightandquirky.com/FW-IdeaLab. Okay, Allie. You're up next.
First of all, thanks. This has been, but I just wanted to ask, like probably more like the kids,
Allie, your audio's a little in and
what is like
out.
the pain?
Can you maybe turn your video off and then
Oh.
that might give you more bandwidth to for us to hear you? Let's try
Oh,
again.
reconnect. Going to reconnect.
You're going to
I'll be
reconnect?
right
Okay.
back.
Okay, we'll look for you. Okay, great. Not a problem. All right. Who else has questions, comments? And Casey, I think you said, oh, Linda. Linda H., go for it, and then we'll come back to Allie. I like how you made yourself known. That's awesome.
I couldn't figure out how to raise my hand, so I was
No problem.
This is my question. So our daughter doesn't have a problem reaching out and initiating friendship. She is super great on that, which I'm, you know, that's wonderful. What happens is she tends to, it looks like she purposely sabotages them. Like, we'll be at a jumpy house with one or two of her friends, and then all of a sudden she'll just start running away from them, and they're like trying to follow her, but she does it over and over and over again. Or she'll at school create an issue or a problem that really doesn't really exist, but she creates it, and then she gets angry and says they don't want to be my friends anymore. So it's like she self-sabotages. Is there any input or help with that?
Yes. So, in no order whatsoever, one of the things I would say to you is for some kids, they don't quite understand the play rules. So one of the things I love to ask kids is like, what are the rules of the playground? What are the rules of play? And don't be surprised if she violates every one of these rules, but is able to fully articulate them, right? So that way, in that situation, I can say like, well, wait, what are the play rules? Right? And I can like have that conversation right after she runs away or does something. I also would say perspective taking. So, what do your friends feel when you run away from them? Right? And I also would say that you get dopamine from fighting and from, certain behaviors. And I'm not accusing her of doing this. I actually don't know that I would say she's deliberately self-sabotaging. I think, if they could, they would, but she may need to understand her brain better. And I'm sure Debbie has stuff on this in her Idea Lab library. But one of the things I do with every single kid I work with is I explain their brain, I explain brain chemicals, I explain, their behavior linked to some of these brain-based things. Because a lot of times, what I find with kids who are sort of, running away or doing those kind of behaviors is that they're bored and then they create a little bit of stuff and then they're not even aware they're doing it. It can also just be that lack of understanding the impact they're having on their friends. Look, she has a fabulous skill. She can make friends, right? So I also would ask her, I come from curiosity, right? We're using our coaching skills. What does it take to keep a friend, right? What do friends expect? And I'm not saying today she's going to wake up and say, "You're right, Mom. Friends don't expect that. Friends don't whatever." But I think it can be part of your general discussion, right? And I want to not blame or shame. I'm literally just talking about this in general and asking. And if you think of movies, TV shows, I'm trying to think of one where there is sort of this give and take during the movie, then I will watch that with, kids and just be like, oh, it's so interesting. That rabbit did whatever. And then, how did they feel? And sometimes kids will literally turn to me and be like, I do that. So whatever we can do to make this just part of the discussion, but I'm really also curious, and I'm trying to think of like what the more we ask her about the play expectations, ask her, who does she like to play with? What's the most fun for her? I would love to ask her like if she ever gets bored. So I'm not going to accuse her of like, oh, you self-sabotage, but like I'd love to get more insight into what goes on in her mind because she might end up telling you things that she doesn't like. And it might be fight, flight, or freeze. She might be flying because something happens that you're not aware of.
Okay. Thank
I wanted
you.
to add a recommendation, Linda. This book, Super Powered by Renée Jane and Shefali Sayberry. What you're talking about has a flavor of anxiety, and they do something really brilliant in this book, Super Powered, that they ask kids to make a superhero character. And when their brain starts thinking thoughts, like they don't like me because XYZ, the superhero kind of says, don't believe everything you think. Let's search for evidence, like we've been talking about. What else could this mean? What else could be true? What else could it be? And so they learn the skill of having sort of rising up that strong part of themselves that is the superhero and actually drawing it as a character, and then being able to talk back to the maladaptive thoughts that aren't serving us. So it's a great book.
Thank you.
All right. So, you guys, I totally forgot to mention this, and it's just cracking me up because I think this is the most beautiful next step to this event, which is buddy matching. So, we're going to do this for Idealab members in April. And I saw a question, how do we do the buddy matching? We have a form for you to fill out with parent name, email, contact information, your child's age, and this is for kids and teens, top interests, and we're going to group kids either geographically by interest, by age. And it's a bold experiment. That's why we call it the Idea Lab. We run lots of experiments. There's no extra charge. And the Idea Lab is 67 a month or 670 a year. When you do annual, you save 2 months. And it's less than half of a single therapy appointment per month. And now we've got the buddy matching. So it's really an incredible value. Now we're going to do the matching and send a little guide, but it will be parents' responsibility to reach out and start that text thread or that email thread. Can we buddy ma match moms next? That'd be great. Yeah, I mean, this experiment can go in so many directions. And I don't know about you guys, but we ended up becoming friends with who our kids were friends with. So I think this could be whole family friendship. So very excited to see where this goes. You must join by April 4th to be included in the buddy matching. Okay, Allie Zins is back. Hey, Allie, let's see if we can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yay, we can hear you now.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to say this has been great. I don't think there's anything out there like this, so this is awesome.
Love
I do have a question. This is for the older kids though, but in terms of how quickly to share, like a lot of times they'll share too much too soon, but then you can go too far the other way and then you're not getting closer because you're not sharing enough. That's one thing, but also when, how soon should you reveal a diagnosis of autism? Because if you feel that the friends are starting to see things that aren't exactly typical, do you like say a teenager, do you tell them like I'm on the spectrum so that they know? Do you explain to them what that is? You know?
Caroline, do you want me to take that one or do you want to go?
No, I have a tool for this. I
Yay!
call this a communisplation. So a communisplation is something you do to express a need or your neurology, right? So to explain yourself. So it can be anything from, I'm a person who's anxious, so I need all the details, right? A lot of my autism clients, like they want to know what's happening and what's coming. And sometimes typical people don't understand. And sometimes they can't or don't want to reveal their diagnosis. So you can reveal your diagnosis. But if you don't want to, or you don't feel safe, or whatever, you don't have to. You describe the trait. And back at the beginning, when I started, when you couldn't reveal as much because we weren't as neuroaffirming as we are now, I started this with people. So it's literally like, I'm a person who needs to know the details. Oh, I'm a person who forgets to text. Could we set up a regular thing? I'm a person who. Sometimes I'm fuzzy on body language, feel
Or
free to
social
tell me direct.
cues,
Right.
like social cues.
I'm fuzzy on social cues. Feel free to tell me directly. Whatever it is, and I have a lot about this on my Instagram because it's something that I find really helps people. I just whatever need, whatever neurology, you explain the trait and you explain what you need. And I think it really works because you can reveal your diagnosis of autism. I'm not against that at all. And I think Debbie's going to speak to that. But here's the one thing. If I say in a group of teenagers, hey, I have autism to explain myself, sometimes they don't know enough to understand. And they might have good intentions, but they just aren't educated on this topic. And so, saying, like, I know I had one student who just said he was struggling with group text chains, and he just said, hey, I'm a person who sometimes doesn't know how much to share.
Oh.
Can you decode this text chain for me? What's going on here? So I think you can use something like that. Your child can use something like that. And Debbie, do you want to speak to the reveal of the autism?
Yeah, I mean, I remember talking with Barry Prezant about this. And self-disclosure is a very personal choice. And I think if we have kids who are, 10 or older, we really need to involve them in the self-disclosure conversation. And Caroline, I couldn't agree more with you that, ADHD and autism, learning disability, these are huge umbrellas. And I'm not sure exactly what we're communicating if we share the label versus the challenge, for example. And it's good to have a comeback. Like I remember interviewing Roberto Olivardia, who has dyslexia and his son has dyslexia. And some kids were like, dude, you're writing like you write like a 3-year-old. And he had a comeback, which was, did you know that, 75% of the sharks on Shark Tank have dyslexia? And dyslexic people are really smart. They just have some challenges with handwriting. So I think having some juicy conversations about this, having the comeback if someone does ask, knowing that there's a dial on self-disclosure that you can talk about it a little or a lot or not at all. And some people start with like a t-shirt. It's Autism Awareness Week. And I know parents who do this, like, if their kid is going to have some challenges on the playground, they might come with a t-shirt that is really revealing to parents that, hey, we might have a child on the spectrum here. Is that enough to go on, Allie?
It's funny because I forgot this was a webinar, not YouTube, and I was trying to hit like. But I just I if there's time for this, if you have to go, it's fine. But I just what about just self-disclosure in general? Like, oh, I have depression. Oh, like, or not just like this person in my family died. Like, how long do you wait till you share those kind of things without freaking people out?
Caroline, this feels like one of your tools, like reading the room almost. And I love going
It
back to what Brené Brown says, which is people need to earn the right to hear your story.
I feel very much that way too, Allie. And I'll tell you, I have a levels of trust and intimacy scale, and it's not in this book, but one of the things that I do is if you take the flavors of friendship, if they're a buddy or an acquaintance, then I wouldn't necessarily share much information. And it's only when they've shown us a history of trust and what they do with that information, or if they've made a similar disclosure and or they've moved into the friend zone, because trust is earned. So what I like to explain to kids is I am looking at the history of what they do with information. And many times this is a great way to decode because kids will say, but you know what? They tell me so and so secrets. Okay, that tells me I don't see them, being trustworthy. I'm not going to share my stuff with them. I think that is a great way. Like they've got to be in the friend zone, and they've got to be someone who I know that they've shown me that they can trust. And then you can brainstorm what are ways that people can show you trust. And it's partly what do they do with information? What do you see them do with information? Do they keep it? Are they throwing it back in people's face? That kind of thing. But I think, I know kids talk about all this stuff and I get it, and it's different than when we were kids, which is great. Except one of the things that happens a lot to my kids is they share something and they expect another kid to know what to do with that information. And I think sometimes other kids don't know how to support depression and stuff like that. So I also want to, I always counsel my clients and other folks, like, remember, not everybody gets it or understands or has knowledge of this,
That's great.
And so don't expect them to become that source of support because they may not even know what that means.
Yeah, like if you learn some information about Santa Claus or the Tooth Fairy, it's probably best to keep it quiet. Okay, great. We're going to take Rudri and Jennifer's questions and then hop off for our member session. We've had a few people join the Idea Lab off this session. So excited to work with you. I can't wait. I hope more of you join us. Again, the Possibility Plan, which is part of the Idea Lab, starts on April 18th, and the buddy matching will happen in April as well. And someone asked if insurance covers it. Bright and Quirky does not deal with insurance, but you can reach out to your plan and ask if you would get them reimbursed. I hear more about EAP, Employee Assistance Programs, covering it, reimbursing families more than insurance. So you can go ahead and try that. Okay, Rudri, love to hear from you.
Hi, Debbie. Hi,
Hi.
Caroline. Thank you so much, you guys. This has been really great. Caroline, I've started binge reading your book, like audiobook, and I haven't gotten through it. But Debbie, this has been so awesome. I cannot thank you both.
I'm so glad.
Yes. So I have two questions. I have an almost 9.5-year-old, and he's highly gifted, and he's very, very creative. So loves creating games at school. And what he does is he talks very fast though, because he thinks so fast. So he's talking fast, he's trying to express, he's trying to get everybody on his team. So I mean, he creates games, and so the kids play in the recess, and so he's created something called the worm bunker at this point, where they actually take worms, they're saving the worms, and then they give wood chips or something. There's that, whatever, they have a business thing going on there. Anyway, so he has all of this stuff. But what happens is, because he's talking fast, a lot of times the other kids don't understand what he's trying to say, or somebody might say, they want to play for some time, and then they are like, I don't want to play. And so it's a two-part question. Number one is, how can we help him with the fast talking? Because we keep saying inside voice, people cannot receive. We keep doing that narration piece of it. And the other part is, then the kids will say no to him, and they'll be like, oh, I don't want to play with you. And then he's like, yeah, mom, Anika didn't want to play with me today, so I'm not going to ask her, like, today, I mean yesterday, so today I won't ask her. So how do we, is there any tips or anything that you have for that?
Okay, so when I'm working with gifted kids, one of my favorite things to do, and I don't have one off the top of mind. First, thank you for buying my book and for binging the book. I so appreciate it. I don't have someone on the top of my mind, and I'm sorry, but I love to find other really smart, amazing people in history who have a similar trait. And because these are gifted traits, it's not actually that hard to do. It's a couple Google searches. And I love to show them how those people were sometimes misunderstood, right? So some of my kids I work with create these really elaborate games, and they understand all the nuances, but not everybody else can follow them because this is somewhat also of a developmental thing, right? Your language, how you express yourself, your ability to, create those directions, right? So I love to use one of those geniuses or one of those people in history and, talk about how they had to learn to explain those things. And so I would come up with a way to show him, like you say things really, really fast, and then ask him, what he can understand, and then start to do that perspective taking. Are other people going to be able to understand when you're that fast? I would practice the self-regulation, right? Because some of this is just he's getting all activated and hyped up in order to tell you his amazing game and about his worms and everything. And then other people are like not following, right? So I would work on that co-regulation, the self-regulation. The speech and that verbal production is very much linked to that. And we don't have to shame or blame. We're just, it's a trait we're helping him understand. And then, a lot of times, kids have this develop this sort of all or nothing thinking. You know, the person said no one time, so it's off, right? And so I would challenge that all or nothing thinking a little bit and say, you know, I'm wondering whether or not we should just say no to Annika, you know, because she said no one time, and like really talk about it. He's incredibly smart. He can probably like work this out and really just start whenever you hear him with that sort of like, you know, it's over, it's done. They said no once, all those kind of words. Just to say, you know, I heard you say it's over, or I heard you say, you know, these all or nothing words, right? Highlight the words and then say, you know, I'm wondering, right, if we're not engaging in some, and then explain like explain all or nothing. Like, I want to make sure that I open for possibilities. I want to make sure I don't say always. Just start talking about that and narrating it. And I would also say, like, what are the play expectations, right? And one of them is that you can sometimes say no to games. Doesn't mean it's over. So I would ask him, like, what are the play expectations? And if he doesn't say you can sometimes say no to games, I would say, well, I think I remember from when I was a kid, and I know from so and so, sometimes you can say no, right? And help him spy on the bids, right? The bids from other kids where they're showing interest, maybe because they're perplexed, like, we played together, I said no once, and now I'm not invited back to the worm thing. So the but anytime I'm like, what's your role? I really love those questions because they're very, you know, they're not like me shaming and blaming. They're just like, I want to know what the role is, what's the play expectation, what's the rule here?
And I'm going to add one more idea, then I want to get to Jennifer. Rudri, one more idea, and he's a little young for this, but debate club. I think young scholars have debate club. He might be a little young, but you know, talk to Sam Young over there. And that is the art of explaining yourself in ways that people can understand with different types of argument, different type ways of speaking. That might be up his alley.
That's great. And he's actually in a school in a class now with highly gifted kids just like him. So that's been an
Perfect.
awesome, it's been a perfect, I mean, it's been a big move, but thank you, Debbie, for everything. Caroline, that was awesome. And I love how you make us parents the coaches. It's very empowering. So I thank you both so
Oh,
much.
thank you. I'm
Thank
so
you.
glad.
No, thank you.
Wonderful. Thanks, Ruji.
Thank you.
Okay, and someone had a question about the possibility plan. Yes, it is available to do it yourself in the Idea Lab all the time. What is different about this live cohort we're going to start on April 18th is that one of our coaches, Lauren, who, for any of you who've met Lauren, she's like, we're sisters from another, from other mothers. We went to grad school together. We raised our kids in the neighborhood together. She's going to, we drop a module on a Thursday, and then the following Thursday, you'll have a co-working session with Lauren, and you're going to work through the exercises just like we did on Wednesday with the mind mapping the strengths. And then we share about it. And there are two really important aspects of the Idea Lab that lead to thriving. It's the knowledge that you gain, and it's the support and connection that you get. It is so, such a lonely journey. It is so validating to be in a community just like we are now with parents who are you know, on similar journeys, trying to help their child you know, move, progress towards well-being. When you're bright and quirky, it's a very nichey thing to know how to do this, and it's all in the possibility plan. It's the bright and quirky framework, and doing it with a live cohort is very cool. It's if you don't have a pretty significant transformation, I will be shocked. Okay. And I know that's a big claim, but we've just gotten so much love over the years about it that I know it's pretty powerful. Okay, Jennifer, we're going to hear from you and then we're going to close it out for the week. I'm going to be kind of beklempt. I've been really enjoying this. Okay, Jennifer, let's hear from you.
Hi, thank you.
Yeah.
My first question is, how long is the code, the friend code, going to be good till?
That is good till Sunday at midnight.
Sunday at midnight. Okay. And then my other question is, I have two children, 8 and 10. How much, if any, of this that we did this week would you do as a family with both children at the same time? Or given their similar but also different skill sets, would you more recommend doing it separately so that you can handle their reactions on an individual level?
Caroline, what say you?
I think the annoying answer is it depends on their personalities, but I would say I would start things individually, and then if you can move them to group, like good winner, good loser, tell a tight story, very, very applicable as a group. So if you can, explain, tell a tight story, do some of the stuff as individual, then sometimes you can move it to a sort of system-wide, parent-wide thing. But I would say that the talking about friendship in general, definitely as a group, anytime, there may be certain conversations you want to have one-on-one. And you don't want to share each, and I know you never would do this, but each kid's stuff with, publicly, right? But I think the idea too is that it's like in the air, right? Like we do a lot of things individually, but we just are talking about friendship, talking about relationships, talking about dilemmas, talking about getting your own help, anything like that as you narrate and go through life.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'll just add to that. I think so much of this is like communicating your values. And now that we know from the research how important positive relationships are, I would bring it up as a fan and family conversation as much as possible. Like, oh, we're gonna do my favorite phrase, forced family fun this weekend. Guys, we're going for, do you want to go hiking or bike riding or out to brunch? How about each of you invite a friend to come along? We'll have a picnic in the park. Who do you want to invite? We're weaving it into our everyday activities and getting nitty-gritty with the tools with whoever needs it, but really making it part of your everyday conversation and doing that narration, like, we can really, I tend to be an introvert. I'm like, I've been having my head in a lot of books. I need to reach out to some friends. Let me think about who I could do what with and narrate that out loud so they can hear you doing that. And making it part of the daily conversation would be awesome.
Thank you.
All right. All right, my friends. Caroline, what an incredible week we've had. What an incredible week. And we've gotten so much positive feedback, and I just feel so lucky and grateful to be able to do this work. It's my purpose, my passion, my mission. I know it's yours too. What are your closing thoughts? If there's any thought you want to leave parents with from this week, and from the bottom of my heart, thank you. Thank you to Caroline for this incredible wisdom you're sharing. Thank you to parents. You have carved out this time to help the very fabric of your child's life. This will change their trajectory. Having positive relationships is priceless. So thank you, thank you, thank you, everyone. And Caroline, any parting wisdom as we close this out?
Well, first, thank you for having me and believing in me as you do. And I want to thank all the parents. You all have been gracious and lovely and so fun to be around. I feel that friendship is not just the most important thing, according to the Harvard study. It brings us joy. And I want everyone to have that joy. And I know that it's a journey, but you are your child's original teacher. And you have so much of that organic experience with them. So I am so hopeful that as you are on this journey and you are their shepherds and their guides, you will help them. It is a long journey sometimes. So please be kind to yourself celebrate everything you do for your child, because we do so much, and then also celebrate all their 1% gains, because it is about where they end up, not necessarily every single hour of every single day. We're on a longer journey.
Thank you. All right. My closing thoughts are, and Caroline knows this, I had the child who couldn't find his people for years. How I wish I could have had these tools. How I wish. But he found his way, and he found his way by leaning into his interests and his strengths. And that was music. And he was supposed to go study math and then took a gap year, which is common for many bright and quirky kids. They need an extra year to keep that brain baking with executive function and all that good stuff. And on the gap year, he's like, actually, I don't want to study math. I want to study music. And my initial thought in my head was, oh gosh, you know, it's so much easier to make a living with math than music. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. I want him to study his passion. There's plenty of digital music jobs these days. He is living his best life. He's in three bands. He's going to college in Denver. His three roommates, they all have hair down to their shoulders with mustaches. They look like a band right out of a 70s movie. He is living his best life. So parents, have courage, have faith in the science that says to lean into strengths, to lean into passions. I am telling you that it works. And whether you join us in the ID Lab or not, take the wisdom of this week and simply apply it and talk to your kids about it and have this be the language of their life. Because when I talk to my kids now, we talk about running experiments. We talk about focusing on strengths 2-to-1. We talk about 1% gains, running experiments. There's winning and learning, not failure. And you're getting your parenting vocabulary. You're getting your focus on what really matters. And it has been our great privilege and honor to share this information with you. And there's much, much more. And we can't wait to share that with you in the Idea Lab. And please visit Caroline's Instagram. It's amazing. Get her book. And we just adore you and thank you for being here. All right. And Caroline, we'll see you in the next session. We'll see our members in the next session. And thanks again, guys. Have a beautiful day. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everybody.